La 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 la. It's me. I'm Paul, and I'm calling Ben Lawrence. Calling Ben Lawrence on the phone. Calling Ben Lawrence on the phone. Oh, whoops. And I'm not in the right audio. What about now? Yes. And it's ringing. Calling Ben on the phone, and it's still ringing.
Pogarty!
And he's... Hey, Ben Lawrence, how's it going?
Good. I just learned something else new about my stupid Bluetooth earbuds. I can't answer calls with them.
What?
I know, it's the dumbest thing.
That's so dumb.
Anyway,
you're
are
not dumb, though. You're a smart guy, and I like talking to you, which is what we're doing on the podcast. Hey, yeah. So let's get this out of the way. Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, Chaz, I hear, underwent a name change.
Why, yes it did, Mr. Goody.
And this is a unanimous, nobody's fighting it, everybody's cool with the name change.
I think it's cool because, there were people like me who, when I first heard about the name change, I was a bit, agog because I just had gone through the whole, like, people trying to rebrand the whole defund the police chant,
and yes.
And so I'm like, you're trying to rebrand Chaz? Did you focus group this? What's going on? But I saw an explanation. I'm not gonna try to relate here, but I'm sold. It's now the chop.
Yeah. And I can say basically the words can matter, right?
Yeah.
An autonomous zone, we've talked about this before. You've heard of the idea of Cascadia.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And how that can be a kind of a weird separatist kind of thing because of its history, even though in reality, you know, the idea of these things coming together, if you take the idea of a white ethnostate out of it, sounds pretty cool. in the same way, an autonomous zone gives the idea of secession to some people, and that's not what the folks doing it wanted
but if you talk to somebody about what the focus is and then you talk to somebody else and ask them the same question, you might get different answers. I'm not quite sure what's going down out there. I'm just here in the office, you know.
Yeah. That was something. I talked to someone from around here, right? Because they said something like, well, you know, Antifa took over Pirate Seattle. And I'm like, eh, it's not really that, you know. And I mentioned that I had somebody who was a friend of mine who worked in, you know, pretty much in the zone.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Very close to it. And they were like, they let him work. And I was like, yeah. It's not really, and the way that I described it from what I saw was very much like the difference between CHOP and the Capitol Hill Block Party doesn't seem to be that different.
And that
except
is a point of contention with a lot of people.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like they want it to be different?
Well, it's been like, you know, let me just say this. My grandmother, who I rarely talk to, called me because she saw on the news in her nursing home that, you know, this whole thing was going down. And she called to make sure that I was okay because, you know, the scary Antifa is taking over, you know, what they say is downtown Seattle.
Right. And, and that's another thing that bugs the heck out of me.
Yeah.
It's like... So,
I had to tell her that, you know, it's fine. It's not, you know, it's like a street fair, but I've heard of a lot of input from people saying, oh, and the point I was getting at, she didn't call me when there was news that police were tear gassing everybody, only when, you know, scary Antifa was, it's the feedback that I've gotten is that it's being gentrified. White people are taking it over. The black voices are being drowned out by the white people who want to have a Capitol Hill block party.
Yeah,
and so the message is getting lost in all of that.
I saw a like two different speakers, one of whom said very plainly, look, white people come in and they ruin everything. I think it was Standing Rock that they used as an example.
Yeah.
Because they come in and they want to help, quote unquote, but what they want to do by helping is take over. They right. want to be in charge.
I'm a good ally. And let me show you how great of an ally. Shut up. Let me tell you how good of an ally I am.
And that's why I enjoy the fact that you basically go in there, do your work, and then leave.
Yeah.
You know, because it's kind of... We've had this conversation before, but I still believe it. Like, movies and books and all that kind of stuff. White people can just take a break. Just hold out. There are plenty of people who haven't had chances to do stuff. Yeah. And here's the thing. I don't mean necessarily that if you're Stephen King, you should stop writing books and all that. But what I am saying is, if there is a internship that goes out for a person of color at a humor magazine, don't get mad that you can't apply for that internship. As an example.
Yeah, that's something that we've always tried to do on the Perfect Bound podcast, is elevate those underrepresented voices in comics. And referring to the Chop Zone, people are calling it the Chop Zone now, which it just sounds like, you know, part of Chop House, the Chop House Row, which is a line of expensive restaurants just down the street. I walked through it on my way home just to get like a vibe of everything.
Back when I lived in Seattle, there was a haircut place called the Chop House, and that really confused me.
Yeah. I hate to see what's on that menu. Speaking of all this,
the other one that was great, in my opinion, great, and I want to put this out, just my opinion, not necessarily Ben's opinion, not necessarily the opinion of the podcast, but it was a guy talking, saying, hey, all you white people in the crowd, find a black person and give them $10.
I saw that.
And everybody was upset about it. Oh, I can't believe this is extortion, whatever. But if you listen to what the person's saying, they're saying for equality to work, you're going to have to give up some of your stuff that you're used to.
Yeah.
And if you can't give $10 to a person, you may want to think about how you feel about your allyship, about how you feel about giving up, you know, your privilege when it comes to finding a job and right. on public transportation, all that kind of stuff. I'm paraphrasing, but I thought it was great, and it's one of those things that reminds me that I am different from a lot of the people that I interact with on a daily basis now.
Yeah.
So those were the two, hey, white people, hold up. I saw a great sketch, and I really think that this would solve. Because, you know, I love Public Freakout. I love watching it. But yeah. There's a lot of problems from our fellow white people in that subreddit. And there's a great sketch that I saw where this woman's talking and she says, have you thought about minding your own business? Minding your own business is something important. When it comes to people, not necessarily authority. And we've got those two things switched right now. So, like, if someone... This is an example. Somebody... if you're driving by and somebody's got a whole bunch of trash in their yard, you can mind your own business. You don't have to go, hey, clean up all this trash to that person. If, however, you're at a, let's say, a city council meeting, and a person of color is trying to talk about their issues, and white voices are shouting them down, you can, you know, I feel like that is a situation where you can go, hey, shut up, because you can.
Right.
You can say, hey, shut up, in a place where necessarily they... cannot, at least right now. It's getting better, though. it's getting to a point now where someone can say, hey, shut up, and it's fine. I like that. Not when they're saying it to me. But, again, we're in lockdown. How often do I get into large conversations about issues on the street with people?
Well,
hardly ever.
Less and less so are we in lockdown these days.
Yeah,
I see many a story of states reopening, and then, you know, a couple weeks later, the inevitable, whoa, hold on, everybody's getting the coronavirus.
Yeah.
Nobody could have possibly seen this coming.
California is looking like maybe they're going to get a resurgence, maybe. Texas, yes. Illinois is still doing really well, and I like to think that all it takes is a whole bunch of people from Illinois going on vacation to screw that up.
To Texas and Alabama and to California.
A lot of people I know are planning on taking vacation in July.
Yeah.
Some of them already took vacation, so I'm staying away from them.
Cancel your
as
vacation.
As much as possible.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're entering, King County has applied to enter phase two of the of lifting the restrictions. Well, I don't really know what that means. We're in phase 1.5 right now, which means some restaurants can operate at like 25% capacity, and other people can get a haircut if they want to. I'm not quite sure what phase two. I'm sure phase two comes with more restrictions being lifted, like retail stores or whatnot. But yeah, it's someone. I think I told you this last week. I was asked if I wanted to go get a haircut, and I'm like, nope. I'm gonna see how this shakes out first.
Yeah. One of the things I can say is that at least around here, I've had reports from people who are, like when I say around here, I mean in the Midwest. This is Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, things like that, where people have, you know, either a place where they work or a place that they've gone has reopened with guidelines that allow them to safely reopen, and people just don't pay attention to the guidelines.
Yeah.
We're talking, you know, patrons not wearing masks, standing, you know, clustering together, being argumentative when asked to please follow the rules. In fact, some people have stated that they have been told by their managers not to enforce the rules.
Really?
To tell people that there are rules, but not right. Because what's been happening is when people get kicked out, they raise a big fuss.
Yeah.
About it. And sometimes, it comes, I don't know if you've ever seen, again, public freakouts, the videos of people who just walk into to stores in California. This isn't looting. You know, this is actually during business hours, walking in, taking stuff while the employees are saying to them, so you're just going to steal that, huh? You're just going to steal that?
Really?
Because they're not allowed to intervene.
Oh, jeez.
So they're trying to shame them as they're taking stuff.
My God.
And it's crazy. Because the people who are doing it just do it. And I am sometimes profiling in a way that I maybe shouldn't. But oftentimes when this is being done, it seems like the people doing it aren't necessarily in need. I mean, I'm sure they are, but it's one of those cases of their parents aren't giving them any more money because of something.
Well,
if that makes sense.
It's a consumer society. You don't need to be in need to desire things. Or,
right,
you know,
exactly. And that's my point, I guess. Yeah.
People steal things all the time when they can pay for it. You know, it's just,
I mean, that's what happened with me when I was shoplifting. I guess that's one of the reasons why I feel angry, because I see myself, you know. I was stealing candy because my parents wouldn't let me have candy.
Yeah.
You know, was I getting food at home? Yes, I was. You know, and then I got caught up in the magic trick side of it. Because it is kind of the ultimate magic trick.
Instead of
making stuff disappear, you actually get it. and you have it. And it's a testament to how smart you are. Oh, I'm smarter than them. And which is why when I got caught, I stopped.
Yeah.
Because I was no longer smart. I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I actually suck.
People proved you were dumb.
I'm not going to do that anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's this big idea that, oh, they have insurance, so they'll they're actually covered. And now that I've become an adult and I deal with insurance companies, I can't imagine how much of a hassle it is to get insurance from theft. You know what I mean? I'm sure you can do it, but I'm sure it sucks.
I think it's something that might be required if you're a retail store.
Oh yeah. I mean, actually doing the paperwork for it and
oh yeah,
all that. Like, I'm betting that selling your items aren't as much of a hassle as claiming the theft.
Where was I recently? I was I can't even remember why it was. I think it was Fred Meyer, and I was grocery shopping. And there's a sign that says, you know, we have these cameras around the store to keep our prices low.
Yeah.
Basically saying, look, don't steal from us because you're being watched.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that might be why, you know what I mean? Like, if you're a high theft area, your insurance is probably higher.
Yeah.
Which means that then your prices have to be higher and so on and so forth. So I did have a nice time talking to people. Every once in a while I see them. But it is a little bit harrowing trying to navigate their worldview that they've developed in their time in isolation and my worldview. You know, like, you right now, Ben, are living in a war zone. I don't know if you know it.
Yeah.
But it's it's mostly a great example. The Egg McMuffin police thing.
I did watch it.
That if you're on social media,
I saw
you've probably seen.
I saw a recap of it. I didn't actually watch the video, but I saw people on Twitter making fun of this lady.
Right. A lot of people are making fun of her. And this is the issue. A police officer went to McDonald's. I'm trying to tell just the facts and taking out all the hyperbole.
Right.
And just saying what happened. Police officer pre-ordered a sandwich from McDonald's and a coffee. Went through the line, just like anywhere else where you pre-order. For drive-through, you have to go through the drive-through still.
Yeah.
Got a receipt. Her food wasn't ready, so she parked. And then they brought her her coffee, and in the time between where she was waiting and the time they brought her her coffee, she had convinced herself that they probably were messing with her food, and so she said that she didn't want the food anymore.
Now, let me ask you this, and I don't know if this is conveyed in the video, but is there a sense of time between when she parked and when her coffee was brought to her?
Too long. But, I mean, you're watching her recount the story.
Yeah.
So you're not seeing any of this stuff happen.
I'm just wondering if it's a matter of, like, maybe a couple minutes versus, like, 20 minutes.
Yeah, and I do not know. She did not make an impression on me when she was talking about this, how long it was. I can say, though, just personally, when we went to Popeye's to get chicken after we had pre-ordered, the line itself took probably a half hour to get through.
Yeah.
So I can imagine, you know, the time that she was waiting added on to whatever time. It was probably a long time. But the big thing, and this is, she doesn't come right out and say it, but she implies it heavily. Her thought wasn't just that she was being made to wait. her thought was that the food, when she received it, wasn't going to be safe.
Right.
And I think this happened just around the time that the Shake Shack thing happened, which, from what I understand, was similar to another fast food thing that had happened earlier, where the restaurant themselves have surveillance, and the surveillance showed that the people at the restaurant did not taint the food.
Right.
So again, we have, this is a, you know, the boy who cried wolf kind of situation, where people don't trust the police's instincts anymore about whether or not their food has been messed with, because they've been wrong several times before.
Yeah. I don't know of every story, but I do recall, you know, the stories that you've referenced where the police have said something's been wrong with the food, or a slur's been written on a cup, and it's turned out not to be the case. So when this actually does happen, or maybe I don't know, maybe this happens on a regular basis and we only hear about the ones that are proved false.
I don't know. I mean, if Reddit's comment section is to be believed, and, you know, how are you going to prove that? A lot of people who work fast food, or who self-identify as fast food workers, I should say that, have stated that as far as they know, it really doesn't happen that often.
I don't get and the whole reason. I don't get the whole thinking that your food is from McDonald's is going to be tainted, because they don't make that stuff to order.
Well, and then the other thing is that the thing that they talk about is it's sort of a panopticon. There are so many people working with you. The idea that all the people that work at McDonald's, right?
Yeah.
Are a monolith where if one person decides to mess with somebody's food, no one else will notice or say anything is very much, and I hate to say this, but a person who doesn't work in fast food's idea.
Right.
Because they view the fast food crew as them, those people who make my food. Whereas,
yeah,
having worked fast food, it's a Machiavellian hotbed of intrigue. And I've gotten into so many arguments with coworkers in my very short tenure in fast food that it's crazy. You know, like, there was spoiled creamer. And I said, we can't serve this. And they're like, you should serve it. Why did you throw that away? Because it's spoiled. Well, you don't make that determination. Right, exactly. You don't make that determination. The manager makes that determination. Okay, well, now I know that.
I'm the manager.
Well, you should have known it before you did it. But I've done it. I can't go back in time and know it. So let's move on from here. You don't tell me when to move, you know, that kind of thing.
I going back to how long this policewoman had to wait for her food. I remember once, yes, when I was a kid, we had to, we went through, it was a McDonald's, they had parking spots just past the drive-thru specifically for people to wait for their, yep, food from the drive-thru.
That is the thing.
I think we waited like a half an hour, I want to say, before we finally realized that they had forgotten about us.
Yeah, I've had that happen too, actually. Really have. So yeah, can't say for sure, but my guess of the situation from her self-reporting it, right, was that her order got lost. They brought out the coffee and forgot that there was other food.
Right.
And would have probably had to give her the food, like, all over again. That's, like, a conversation, like, and what's that lady waiting for? Why is that person there? Oh, shoot.
Was she in her squad car? Were they, like, why is that police person? Why is that police?
I think so, yeah. She was in uniform when she was complaining about it.
Yeah.
Or relating the story, I should say.
It was Oklahoma last summer, and I was at a Starbucks, and they were just so freaking busy, and they had forgotten the order of the gal in front of me. No, I was getting ready to order, And some gal went up to the, not the, like, the, where you pick up your drink, but where you order your drink. And,
yeah,
like, reminded the dude, where's my drink? And he's like, oh, yeah, sorry. So he goes and he makes her drink. And I'm like, this guy's going to forget my drink. And I order a black coffee, the easiest thing that they normally just make it, you know, give it to you right there. But he's like, all right, I'll sit you on the counter. And yeah, it was about, I waited about 15 minutes before I had to go up and be like, dude, I ordered a black coffee. Where is it? I was nicer than that, but that was my feeling.
Man, Ben, how does it feel to be a Karen? I'm kidding.
I was very nice about it. But it's one of those things where it's like, I cannot imagine how stressful it is to work in a place like this.
Oh, and like I said, you know, I talked about my fast food thing. I was doing that when I was, let's see, 19. So I was probably around 21 working at a fast food place.
Yeah.
And it was the most stressful job I've ever had, probably. Although I should say, working in the college, you know, we had dorms and we had a cafeteria in the little, like, you have your little student center in the basement. There's your mailboxes and the computer center, and on top there's the cafeteria. And I was doing dishes in that, and that was probably the most stressful job.
Yeah,
'cause it was hot. You're working in this industrial environment. There's a big, like a weird cross between a dishwasher and a assembly line, where the dishes just keep coming.
Yeah.
And your job is to stack them. But the assembly line doesn't stop, right? So sometimes people will, as a joke, pile all the dishes at one spot.
Right.
And then you have to, like, hurry and do it. And I think I might have mentioned this before, but I'll mention it again because I love it so much. I found a loophole, and that's, if a dish is broken, you just throw it away.
Right.
So I would throw a dish against the wall and break it so it fell into the trash can. And then any dish I threw in there would break against the dish that was already in there. So that's how I would clear things, because it was easier for me to break dishes than to actually stack it up. And I got in trouble for that.
I don't know if I'd call that a loophole.
Yeah, it really wasn't, because I still suffered punitively
take these,
for that.
When you were discovered purposefully smashing dishes, did they take that out of your paycheck?
No, they did not. Although I did, after that discussion, where I said, well, I don't know what else I was supposed to do because, you know, I can't control the students being jerks.
Right.
I was told that I was too flippant about it and I needed to respect my manager more. To which I replied, I am respecting my manager as much as I am capable. And eventually they suggested that I maybe not work there anymore.
I didn't get fired.
I did. Yeah, I did. I was like, I don't like this either. But my dad was having me do it. Here's the thing. I want this to be, you know, you can probably glean this from the podcast already, but I have not always in my life been a good person. I like to think of myself as a good person, but when I reflect upon my actions, I know that I am not always in that category.
Well, I think one of the things that makes you a good person is having these experiences where you understand and realize what you've done that was wrong.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think I've been more good than bad on average.
Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, that's the thing, is that, and this is one of those things. Bill Hicks has this whole thing about ex-smokers. When you have done bad things and you have decided that you're not going to do bad things anymore, you can often be a raging jerk to the people who are doing nothing more than you have done before in your life. You know,
the
very
only
judgmental.
Reason I don't quit smoking is because I might become one of you.
Exactly. That's right. That's right. That's exactly what I was thinking of. So So yeah. Oh, I should say Collinsville, Illinois, which is close to Edwardsville. There was one woman, a white woman, probably around our age. It's tough to tell, and I really do hate to say it, but people seem to age faster in the Midwest somehow.
It's a hard work. I don't ethic. Know. Not like us lazy so. Bums over here on the coast.
Yeah, but her. So I would say she's in her 40s, probably, with a Black Lives Matter sign, standing by herself in the middle of the town as I was driving through on my way to work, and I was like, she is doing more than I am. That is just something that is true. And so I have to think about that. I am not going to criticize people who are doing more than I am. I bring this up because I waved at her as I was going by, like, good job. And she didn't wave at me.
How rude.
And I was like, I'm at my peak white man right now. I waved at you in support of your Black Lives Matter sign. You didn't wave back at me. I, therefore, take issue with the way that... I mean, come on. Come on. It's 2020. I'm 47. I should be better than this by now. But no, so the radical and principled stand that I take is saying to people who I live and interact with, you know, in my community, well, you have to think that the protesters and the people looting the stores maybe aren't the exact same people, right? That's the extent.
Yeah.
And eventually they're like, I guess you're right. I mean, yeah. I do get people over to my side.
Yeah,
eventually.
Keep saying that because that's, you know, the narrative is that's I see coming out from all of this is that it's the protesters, the looters, and the rioters are just the same group of people.
Right, and it's not true.
Not true.
Now, are there people that swim in all those three spheres? Sure. You know, and this is the thing that people sometimes use to their advantage when trying to call out a group. They'll find this guy and they'll say, ha ha, here's this guy with his characteristic light blue baseball cap and navy jacket here. And then I also see him over here. So you tell me that they're not the same people.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. Which is a lot easier when it's, hey, here's this guy dressed in all black and this guy dressed in all black. Same person? Question mark. Probably not.
Yeah.
Especially if the looting here and the protests over here were happening at the exact same time. Can't be the same person.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing.
Which, by the way... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say the rioters co-op the protests.
Yeah. An interesting video to watch is a video called Riot Holiday. I don't know if you've seen it.
I have not.
It's some dude, who happened to be in Seattle during one of the times when some cars got set on fire.
Yeah.
Downtown?
Yeah.
And he's
the police
and
car set on fire.
Yeah. Well, and the ones that I was seeing were regular people cars.
Yeah.
What do you call those? Civilians cars?
Civilian cars.
But he's the thing that I found fascinating about it is because, you know, I was in the WTO riots.
Uh-huh.
Again, walking to work at Amazon.com, one of the most the man things that you could possibly be doing at that time.
Was it at that time, though?
I don't think
Amazon had reached the man status in 1999.
I felt like at the time it did.
Yeah.
Because, I walked from my apartment to work, right? one of the security guards, I was trying to get in. One of the security guards was shaking his head no at me. I showed him my blue badge, which said I was a full-time employee of Amazon.com. He opened the door, grabbed me, and pulled me inside and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm going to work." And he's like, "No, we're evacuating the building." So I went to my desk, and I started working. I mean, the riots are going on outside. You know, people shouting nonviolent protest while other people are breaking the window at Nike Town. Again, yeah. How can they be lying? They say it's a nonviolent protest, and other people are... Maybe they're shouting nonviolent protest at the guy who's breaking the window. They aren't lying to you, the observer, saying that they're nonviolently breaking into Nike Town. There are two people. One guy's breaking into Nike Town. The other person's like, "Hey, what are you doing?" That's basically the situation. So, and this was back in, like I said, WTO times. Tear gas going off, things like that. And they tried to get us all out of the building. And I said, I live at 4th and Virginia, which is not anywhere near safe right now.
Right.
I am staying in this building. So I stayed in the building, stayed in the building, stayed in the building. Do you remember, I might have told the story in the podcast before, but it's pretty good, I think. You remember in Hot Fuzz when each person that they talk to when they're going up the chain of command is a more popular actor? Sort of. They talk to, I think, the lieutenant and then the chief, and the chief is some famous guy. Does any of that ring a bell?
I don't remember the more popular actor kind of thing. I remember, are we talking about in the city when they're talking to Martin Freeman?
Yeah, Martin Freeman's like one of them, and then it's another higher up, and then another. This is my impression. My impression was that they were going for higher status actors as they went up the chain of command.
Gotcha.
But that's exactly right. In the same way, higher and higher level people came to try to get me and this other guy named Patrick Sawitsky, who I was there with, to leave the building. Because they were evacuating the building, and they couldn't leave without everybody out of the building. And eventually it was me, VP of Customer Service, and Patrick Sawitsky, and a high-ranking member of the police, or the Sheriff's Department, one of the two, and they drove us in a police van up to the Pacific Medical Center. That's why I say I felt like I was the man at that point. Because escorted by the police through a now cleared out Seattle, just tons of boarded up places and trash and stuff like that, into a car up to the Pacific Medical Center where Jeff Bezos and his ilk were. And then I worked the rest of my shift from there. All and the then way I up. Left and got breakfast.
Did you? Yeah, because you worked the night shift. Did you? Did you walk home from PacMed? That's a heck of a jaunt.
I think what happened was we did walk. We walked from PacMed because we were all pretty hopped up at that point. Just adrenaline and woo, we made it and all that. We walked from PacMed to, I want to say, through the International District to Capitol Hill, and then had breakfast, and then some of us went off to join the protest, and I went off to go back home.
Right.
That's what I remember. It's been a long time, so I may have gotten it a little bit wrong, but that's what I remember happening. Oh, speaking of which, 21 years. Is Nike Town still where Nike Town is?
I have no idea. I've never been.
Downtown.
Yeah, I've
like
I,
on
I don't,
sixth.
I've no idea.
Okay, let me put it another way. Nike Town is not in Capitol Hill,
right?
Because there was a guy, apparently, again, this is a public freakouts thing, who drove his car and almost hit some people, and he claimed that he was a security guard, either getting off work or going to work at Nike Town, and he just made the wrong turn. And this is why
a likely story.
people complaining about, you know, CHOP, the protests, all that kind of stuff, who haven't lived in Seattle, are crazy, because they're like, well, you know, the guy just took a wrong turn. You don't take a wrong turn to go to Nike Town and end up in Capitol Hill. That's a huge difference. Although, I guess I will say this. Maybe if he was from out of town, we have had people show up at Annex before thinking that they're at Pike instead of East Pike, or they think they're at Pike instead of East Pike.
Yeah.
So that has happened before. Still, that's not where Nike Town is, but
I once took a wrong turn near Harbor Island and ended up downtown. If you, this city's confusing sometimes. If you don't know where you're going, you can end up so far away. But if he was if he did this near his workplace,
yeah.
And he wasn't, like, you know, this was his first week on the job and he just moved here from Albuquerque, I'm suspicious of his story.
Yes. And I wish I knew the entire story, but I don't. Hey, speaking of knowing the entire story, are there any corrections for today?
Actually, they just came in a couple minutes ago.
Hey, that's why I was vamping. Ben and I don't do any research, right? So when I say I don't know this, it's not that I can't be bothered to look it up. Well, I guess it is because I can't be bothered to look it up, but it's by design. Ben and I are doing this. Part of this podcast is an experiment to see how well we can recall things.
Well, if you're trying to come up with the genesis of it, it's because you spent an entire show trying to find something.
Yeah, that's right. And I was like, come on, Ben, wait a second. And so I made a promise that I would never look anything up again. And then I decided, well, hey, why don't we make this a psychological experiment and see how well we can recall things? And
which so we asked you. Quite lovely for the audience.
Yeah, well, Jennifer has complained before about video games that make you create content for them, Dreams, for instance, for PlayStation, and other things too, which is exactly what we do. We ask our listening audience to create content for us by finding things that we did wrong in previous episodes of the podcast, telling us what we got wrong, and writing it in an email to Ben's email at yahoo.com@gmail.com, which is a real email address and fun to say. And we take those things that we got wrong and rebroadcast them to you in a later episode in a segment that we like to call Corrections. Ding! Now, as mentioned before, I'm married to a woman named Jennifer. We call her Jennifer Fact Checker on the show. And I told Jennifer at 5:30 my time, which is a half hour before the podcast. Oh, hey, I forgot. Ben said that he wanted to do the podcast a day early. So it's in a half hour. And she was like, well, great. I guess I'll start listening then. So, and I'm guessing then the only corrections we have are from Jennifer. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, well, let's do it then. What does Jennifer say we got wrong?
All right, well, last week we were talking about the disparity between Chicago and the rest of Illinois. I assumed Chicago's mayor was a Democrat and all the mayors of small town / medium-sized town cities in Illinois are Republican. And you said that Edwardsville is a college town.
Yeah.
So you didn't know. So there's just one correction. Jennifer says, interestingly, Edwardsville's mayor is a member of a third party. A third party he created because he was kicked off the Republican ballot when he ran for state Senate. I want to know that story. Why was he kicked? Ooh, intrigue and mystery. Why was he kicked off the Republican ballot?
Wait, does she not say?
Nope, she just says that's it.
Oh, interestingly enough, she did inform me of why he was kicked off of the ballot.
Oh, lay it on us.
Well, I don't want to. This is one of the things that I would. Not want to get in trouble for liable, or anything like that. Well, I don't know if a podcast is actually writing it down. But here's the thing. The basic thing is that a photograph surfaced of him at a party dressed in a manner that is inappropriate facially for someone who is wanting to seek public office.
Gotcha.
That is the story that I have.
I think I know where you're going with that.
Yes. According to the information I had, this was 10 years ago. So not really too much. I have photos that have been taken of me in many compromising positions throughout my life. But I think most of them were from when I was a teen and in my 20s.
Yeah.
So I can say, oh, well, you know, during those times, I would, of course, now people are rushing to end my political career to find things where I'm
well, and that's
in
one of
compromising
the things
positions.
That's one of the things I was talking about earlier is that, you know, if the more you screw up as a kid, hopefully if you were able to recognize and see that kind of thing, the better adult you'll be because you're able to learn and grow from your mistakes. Now, not everybody is as self-reflective as, you know, most people and can actually learn and grow, but yeah.
I have to say, and this is a true story. I might have mentioned this on the podcast before too. One of the big things that really got me into a headspace where I understood like what my privilege was all about and things like that wasn't college, but was actually the military, specifically the Air Force. The Air Force has a lot of investment in, I don't know, like workplace harassment training for people.
Okay. Yeah.
And so you know, it's hard to believe maybe, but I really do think, and you know, I'm not telling people to go out and join the military or anything like that, but my time in the military really did. It was one of
did
the first times.
Did it straighten you out?
A little bit, yeah. One of the things that as you know, we in the United States have an integrated military. Not always the case, but you know, it used to be a little bit more split up. Still segregated by gender. Unless you're in the band. When I was in basic training, I believe the band, they all went together. I'm sure that they had different dorms and stuff, but you know what I mean? There's men's areas and women's areas still. So we're not at Starship Troopers levels yet.
Right.
But the main thing is, I mean, I do not believe as a small town Midwestern guy, even though I did have some interaction in college, but in classes and things like that, you're not really interacting as much as you do when you're in the military. So that was probably the most interaction I had with people who were so very different from me. And it was a good experience. Now I recognize it. But at the time, I couldn't stand doing things that I thought were dumb. And what I mean by that is listening to people who I didn't think were as smart as me, who were in positions above me. And that's not the fact that they were different than me, because that's not the case. They were almost all white people, but they presented themselves in a way that made me at least think that I was smarter than them.
Right.
Humor wise, they made jokes at my expense and I tried to make jokes at their expense back at them, which doesn't work if they outrank you because you can get in trouble. But in the same way,
that seems
unfair. What's that?
That seems unfair.
Oh, yeah, but if you think about it, for a military to run smoothly, you really don't want to have people being undercut by their subordinates, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
But the main thing is, when I was in basic training, you know, I went to Muslim services, which was really interesting. Yeah. I, you know, had people that I was working around where English was their second language, which wasn't, I mean, again, in college, there was some of that, but they were fellow students. I didn't really, you know, you can self-segregate in a college situation. You know, you don't, your unconscious biases, right, when you're choosing friends and things like that, aren't challenged.
Right.
Whereas in the military, these are the people you're hanging out with. So it was a real, it was a good experience for me. I think that it could go the other way for some people, if they don't open themselves to the training that you receive, I guess. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But then again, once again, when I will say this, I was in a lot of tech companies in Seattle when I was working there. And it wasn't until I moved here in the Midwest, people of color, had large prominent positions in any of the organizations I was working with.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, I mean, too.
Seattle is a very white city.
Yeah. And I wasn't, I wasn't really thinking of it when I was there, I guess.
Yeah. And I think I saw a statistic recently that the percentage of black people in Seattle has actually declined. I may be misremembering that.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be a fact that someone could probably check. Yeah. I would think. And still, the thing about St. Louis is still so weird, how it's split up into all these really small towns that are, you know, it's the way that Jennifer described to me after we talked about this in the last episode, kind of, it's not like Seattle, Tacoma, Fife, and all that kind of stuff. It's like if Capitol Hill were its own city.
Right.
And First Hill was its own city. And
yeah,
with a completely different police department, different mayor, things like that. That's how St. Louis is broken up. And because of that, funding is really crazy for that sort of thing. Pretty weird,
I can
Ben.
Only imagine.
Pretty weird. Speaking of pretty weird, hey, Ben! Why did I turn off the lights? I think I just didn't turn the light on. It was brighter when I came down here. Here she comes. It's Betty.
Hey.
Who still has at least 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, before her band camp starts. But it's supposed to start. Oh, handing off the headphones. Here we go.
Hi.
Hey, you looking forward to band camp?
Yes. That's actually probably the first time ever that I've said that.
Oh, really?
Because it beats doing nothing.
Yeah, I guess it does. So wait, are you playing the drums?
Yeah, I always do.
Right on. Have you been to band camp before?
Yep.
What do you do in band camp? What's a typical day?
You, the first part of band camp. Sorry.
Are you sneezing?
No. The first part of being in band camp is that you go and meet, like, the people in charge of your specific group. Like, there's a person in charge of trumpets, a person in charge of saxophones. I meet up with the people in charge of percussion, of course. And we do kind of like a mock-up sectional where it's just our group working on our parts. And then, another part of the day is where we do a rehearsal that's just all of band together. And all that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so all of that, And then you just repeat that for however many hours until it's time to go back home.
Do you go home every night, or do you stay in like a dormitory? Is it like a summer camp?
I go home every day, yes.
Okay. Cool.
Cool.
Yeah. I remember when I was in I was a Cub Scout, and there was we did scout camp, and it was one of those things where I spent a week living in a cabin in the forest with all my other Cub Scout friends.
Yeah, I did that once and only once, and I'm probably never going to do that again because it is awful.
I'm with you. I did not enjoy the experience at all.
Yeah, I just want to go home to sleep on an actually comfortable mattress, even though my right. mattress is not too comfortable because it's not one of those Tempur-Pedic ones. It's one of those bouncy ones. I don't like the bouncy ones. They aren't as comfortable.
Nah. Yeah, and you're sleeping inside too at my scout camp. The cabin wasn't so much a house as it was a shed, and so it was just these bunk beds in a play shed.
Oh yeah,
open on one side.
Oh yeah, that I've done that at Girl Scouts too, but luckily, news to you guys. Not so officially retired from Girl Scouts, because I thought it would be a good idea because I heard it from Phineas and Ferb or something, but when it actually happened, I was like, this is boring.
This is me giving you a thumbs up. Good for you for speaking out about it.
Yeah, sorry if any of the Girl Scout people actually listen to this, but...
saying what you like. Oh, sorry, Ben's talking. Am I talking while Ben's talking?
Yeah. What were you
Well,
say?
I heard you talk, so I stopped. I was just gonna say, maybe you should notify everybody of your retirement before this goes public.
Oh. This is my notifying of everyone of my retirement.
All right, there you go.
Sorry, well done. Wearing very warm clothes right now for reasons I will not get into.
Cosplay?
Shut up! Shut up!
It's a very father-daughter moment right there.
And it's hot. As in temperature hot, you dingus! I'm only 14!
Jeez.
Yeah. Yep, that's it, kinda. I'm gonna go now. Bye.
Okay, love
All right,
you,
bye. Good talking
thanks
to you.
Thanks for playing.
Bye.
All right. What I was gonna say is I really didn't like being in basketball.
Yeah.
And I never really brought it up to my parents. I mean, I cried after basketball sometimes, and they didn't take that to mean maybe I shouldn't be in it. But when eventually, this is, I guess, by the time I was in eighth grade, eventually I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And the teacher that I had also suggested that maybe I shouldn't do it anymore. I felt so much better. So when she said that she wasn't interested in continuing Girl Scouts, I was like, cool. Yeah. And again, she's doing band now, which is still a group activity where she gets to interact with other kids. So,
yeah, I remember being a kid and being on Little League team. And I didn't like it at all. But I stuck with it because I thought that's what you were supposed to do. But there was one... There was one day where my mom drove me to, I can't remember if it was going to be just a practice or a game. And I put up the biggest fuss. I did not want to get out of the car. I was probably, I was probably 11 or 12.
Okay. Yeah.
didn't want to get out of the car. I just refused to play. And my mom, I think she basically just got tired of arguing with me. And so we went home. And apparently, and I didn't know this, that was picture day. So I don't have any pictures of, I don't have a proper picture of me with my team, my second year of playing Little League.
And then picture day got its revenge on you. For you, for a while, every day was picture day. Indeed. Except you were on the other side of the camera.
I was, speaking of stressful jobs, that was, I was trying to think of what my most stressful job was. I think it was, being the photographer in the schools.
Yeah, I remember you talking about how they expected you to somehow keep order with the kids sometimes, which is crazy.
Unreal demands on the photographers from teachers and administrators.
Ugh.
And administrators, you'd think that they would be, they turned out to be worse than teachers, because I was going to say, you would think that they would just be teachers who've decided to not teach but administrate, but I got the feeling that a lot of administrators have never taught a class.
Oh, yeah, I could see
they
that.
They were just like MBA candidates who decided to, you know, to run a school.
Wow. That would,
a lot
that
of them
would
were
suck.
Jerks. I can say that because I don't work at that job anymore.
Exactly. Oh, man. Look who's crawling back with his camera and his plastic combs. did you have to supply the combs, by the way, Ben?
I don't think we had cones, but I supplied everything else.
Yeah, the reason I mention is picture day, for me, as you know, very curly-haired boy, I would get these black combs every
combs.
Time.
I thought you said cones. Yeah, I had boxes of those little black
combs.
I knew it. Jeez.
Okay.
I misheard you.
So, I think that's it, Ben. We're done.
I think that's all. I think we're out of time.
But you know what? There is one last thing, and that's for me to tell you. During this next week, before I talk to you again, I would like you to keep it wrong.
And the one last thing I get to check off my list is to throw that right back at you. Keep it wrong, and I will talk to you next week.
All right. Talk to you later, Ben.
All right. Take care.
Oh, I need to say it. Chekhov's list. If you introduce Chekhov's list, then you have to check it off before the end of the podcast. Okay, that's it. All right.
All right. Bye.
Bye.